Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Tuesday, and today we actually have a guest. We're going to go right to him before we get into the other news. Our joining us today on the phone is Zach Goble, who does vocals and guitar for the band Madeline Hayes. Aloha, Zach. Welcome to the show. Thank you for spending time with us.
How are you, Michael?
I'm doing fine. And the reason I wanted to have you on the show is I got an email basically describing a very strange incident. Now, I understand that you're basically on tour. You've got your debut album out, and you were in North Carolina. And why don't you tell the listeners what happened there?
All right. You pretty much hit the nail on the head. We were in Salisbury, North Carolina, in support of our debut album, In Search of Lost Time, and we got to the venue probably about 6 o'clock. You know, as normal, our show was supposed to start at about 9:30. We get there, we were hanging out, we got all our equipment loaded in, and the first band went on at 9:30. They were a heavy metal band, and they played their set, and everything was great. And we started our sets, and next thing I know, we played our first song, and then our the second song that we played, we've kind of recently really started discovering things about 9/11 truth. The band as a whole has kind of started doing research into, you know, into the whole, you know, all the events surrounding it. We've really started delving into, you know, watching documentaries like Endgame and, you know, Truth Rising and Loose Change and things like that, just kind of, you know, trying to educate ourselves. It's something that we've kind of really grown into, and, you know, really a lot of interest has come up with the band regarding all of the information there. And we wrote a song about it, and before we started the song, I kind of went into, you know, a little speech, you know, kind of just telling the audience how we felt about it and, you know, telling them that, you know, where the inspiration for the song came from. And we started playing the song, and immediately there was an officer up to the stage who confronted our tour manager, and we didn't really know, you know, what exactly was going on. You know, we saw an officer talking with our tour manager, and we were kind of assuming, you know, the police station was about a block away, so we were assuming maybe it was a volume issue. You know, we weren't any louder than the band before us, but you know, that's normally what you would naturally think. So we just kept playing our set, and shortly thereafter, several more officers came up as well. And apparently they were saying that it was not a volume issue, it was a content issue. So they apparently had some kind of problem with what we had to say, and immediately told us that we needed to stop playing and pack up, and we needed to vacate the premises. So, our set got cut short at about 30 minutes. We packed up. We got everything loaded up in our cars. And, you know, as soon as we left the premises, got back on the main road, we were instantly pulled over by a police officer. He actually pulled our drummer out of the car, proceeded to give him three different field sobriety tests, which he passed with flying colors. Even after passing the field sobriety test, he then felt it necessary to perform a breathalyzer test on him, which he also passed. And that, you know, they were just really trying to get anything and everything that they could on us, and mm-hmm. followed us then to the interstate, and
ran you out of town is what he did.
Got chased out of town, yeah.
Yeah. Now, and basically their only issue with you, they, there was no law that you had broken. It wasn't a volume issue. I mean, you were in a proper venue where it's expected you're going to have rock music and a lot of people having a lot of fun.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
The officer just said it was just the fact that you were talking about 9/11 being an inside government false flag attack. That was the only justification they had to harass you and end your set. I mean, you know, you need to find yourself a good lawyer, because I think there's a lawsuit there on First Amendment.
So.
Yeah, on First Amendment grounds. I mean, certainly police harassment. You know, this whole idea of trying to find some way to arrest you for a DUI or drunk in public or whatever may have been because they realized they'd overstepped their authority in shutting you down.
Right, and that they needed to find something.
Yeah, that they could sort of counter a potential lawsuit. But, this, unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of this across the country where people who are speaking out, the police are just, you know, harassing them and repressing them, and they don't even pretend to be following the law anymore. And it's going to continue until some people, you know, stand up. So I really hope, and let's face it, this is not going to hurt the publicity for your album either. I hope you're able to find a good civil liberties lawyer, good constitutional lawyer, and go back and sue this police department. And just
Absolutely.
Say, yeah, they had no right whatsoever to shut your show down just because they don't like what you're saying. I mean, that's not what the United States is supposed to be about.
Yeah, we totally felt, and I mean, you know, like I said, the band in the past, especially with the material that's on our debut album, you know, we're not a controversial band. You know, we don't have songs about, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll and, you know, devil worship or anything like that. I mean, our music is from the heart, and we try to connect with our fans on a very, very deep level. You know, our songs are about just the things that we've been through in our life, you know, the people that we've lost. And, you know, that's really where the inspiration for our music comes from. And, you know, once we started really delving into, you know, the events surrounding 9/11 and really started researching it for ourselves, you know, we kind of took it upon ourselves as a band. We were like, you know, we need to, you know, say, you know, we need to, you know, put our piece in about this. And, you know, that's kind of the direction that we've started wanting to take. And this song that we wrote was really the first instrument in our, you know, repertoire of, you know, of getting that word out there and really saying how we feel about it. And we were just completely, I mean, we were flabbergasted that, you know, that they were saying it's a content issue, that they didn't like what we had to say.
Okay, let me ask you a question here, just to get this absolutely clear. There's no profanity in the song, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so we're not talking about local community standards for obscenity or anything like that. There really is no other possible interpretation of their saying that they have a problem with the content of that song other than it talks about 9/11 being a let's go to war manufactured false flag. And, you know, given this situation where it seems like they're starting to ramp up again the push to go into Iran, you know, it may be that police departments around the country are getting the little memos from the FBI and Homeland Security saying you've got to discourage people from talking about, you know, the fact that the government has lied us into one war and maybe trying to lie us into another. It is just amazing. Of course, North Carolina, you know, and I don't mean to insult the North Carolinians listening to the show here, but, you know, it does sound, you know, kind of very backward kind of dictatorship mentality. I mean, and again, no profanity. You're not talking about worshiping Satan. You're not offending the Christians. You're basically saying what 80 to 85% of America already believes, which is that 9/11 was a manufactured, staged PR event to justify a period of renewed American militarism. And it is amazing, yeah, and I'm wondering, yeah, you really need to get a lawyer, and you really need to go back, and you need to sue these people.
We are definitely, you know, we're searching for, you know, the right moves to make as far as that's concerned. You know, we know that what we're saying is, you know, not necessarily going to be, you know, we know that there's a lot of companies, there's a lot of distribution companies, there's a lot of, you know, the major labels, you know, as far as, you know, radio stations even, that might, you know, end up having a problem with us. And, it, you know, it might, we're starting to really understand that it might end up, you know, being somewhat, you know, I'm hoping not completely detrimental to our careers, but we're seeing that it might, you know, put a little damper on things. And we're just, I mean, that's
no,
just
didn't hurt the Dixie Chicks.
More.
Didn't hurt the Dixie Chicks. And, you know, we've got recording artists who have got songs that basically say, you know, there's an issue to be looked at here. And what was the name of the song again? And is it on iTunes or any place else where people can listen to it?
The name of the song is The Complex Drops the Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And the song, we are actually going into the studio to cut a demo that song will be included on sometime in May. And
all right. Would you do me a favor? Would you get back in touch with me once you have a demo that's on air that we can, and let, you know, call back in, let us know if you get a lawyer. We have to let you go here because we got to do some commercials. Zach, thanks for the call, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
to Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. The phone lines are open. Matt is sitting in the control room feeling lonely and neglected, so pick up the phone, dial in, come on the air. Let's talk about what's going on with the world today. All right, getting back to the news here real quick. Obviously, the Dow had a real roller coaster day. It was rocking and rolling all over the place. Was heading up throughout most of the day. A lot of this was automatic program buying by the portfolio managers. This is the end of the quarter. They like to put their money back in at this point for reasons having to do with quarterly tax returns and so forth and so on. Also, the Federal Reserve is apparently buying up T-bills, which is kind of this really strange situation because, you know, the treasuries are basically printed up out of thin air by the U.S. government, and the Federal Reserve prints up the money out of thin air, and they swap the two, and somehow this is supposed to make both pieces of legalized counterfeiting legitimate and honorable, but that's what they're doing, and they're saying that this is what drove up the stock market. Toward the very end of the day, though, it went into a very steep dive, was saved by the bell, and it still ended up about 86 points, but if you look at that last hour, the trend was very clearly back down again. And sooner or later, these little tricks and these little bookkeeping maneuvers and all these other little things, they're just not going to work anymore. Because the bottom line is you cannot run an economy without making products that people want to buy, and we're not doing that. And nothing that Barack Obama and his people are doing addresses that reality. It's all bookkeeping tricks and change the rules and move this over here and move it over there and patch and so forth and so on. And frankly, I'm personally of the opinion they don't know how to fix the economy. They don't understand manufacturing. They really do think the entire world can be made to run with just creative bookkeeping tricks and spinning the money around in a really, really fast circle, and it will just magically grow all by itself. It's magical thinking. It's wishful thinking. It is not going to work. Now, we're seeing the news about Barack Obama's trip to the G20 summit. He's in London, and I noticed this morning the news was almost exclusively focused on his car, the Beast, this big, huge custom limousine. Basically, it's a very nice-looking mobile tank. That's exactly what it is. It's armored. It has its own life support system, so it can't be gassed. Everything's bulletproof on it. It's got weapons. It's got infrared. It's got all, you know, it is a very heavily armored limousine, without a doubt. And the problem with it is twofold. One, when you have the leader of a country who is that afraid of his own people and the rest of the world, there's something wrong. That's a warning sign that something's going on. And second, if the corporate media is focused on his car and his preparations, it means that whatever's really going on in the G20, it's not going well for the United States. And we are hearing persistent rumors, and I'm going to stress, they are rumors at this time, but we're hearing rumors that the G20 are trying to basically say, we don't want to use the dollar as the international reserve currency anymore. We want to come up with an alternative, whether it is a manufactured global currency, that's one agenda, or a basket of the European international currencies, of which the dollar may still be a small part of. That's another suggestion put forward. But if the dollar is removed or replaced as the international reserve currency, it's all over but the shouting, because it is that demand for the dollar for international exchange, together with the fact that the dollar is still the principal oil currency, by dint of military force, I might add, that keeps foreign demand for dollars high, even against all the downward force that we see on the dollar from our incredible trade imbalance and the current hyperinflationary maneuvers we're seeing by the Federal Reserve, where they're just running those presses night after night after night, and you're throwing the money out there, and they're going to have to keep on throwing it out there until something breaks, because we're hearing that the major money center banks in the United States are each $80 trillion in derivatives exposure. Somebody's going to eat that. The plan is to stick it with you. And what they're going to do is inflate the debts away. They're going to say, okay, well, we'll just print up $80 trillion and here, go pay off the people you owe the money to, and they'll take the money, and the result will be 2 years from now that we'll be paying $20 for a loaf of bread. That's exactly where we're headed with this situation. It will accelerate much faster if the G20 drops the dollar, and sooner or later, they have to. Sooner or later, as the dollar becomes worthless, as the dollar becomes a laughingstock, really, as the dollar becomes worthless, the rest of the world's nations have to stop using it as the international reserve currency. They're going to have to go to something else, probably the euro, if nothing else. So that's what's going on with there. And, you know, getting back to this story about paranoid leaders, and I remember just before we invaded Iraq, and our corporate media was filled with all these stories about what a bad man Saddam was, and his people hated him. And I remember seeing this video. I wish I'd saved it. I didn't. I wish I'd saved it, because it showed Saddam and some of his people coming out from a meeting in a building in Baghdad, and it was just an open street. And there was a crowd, and they just sort of gathered around him. And it was an open space, and there was no heavy military secret service type protection. And Saddam gets up on a car to wave at people as they cheer him. And some of these people are carrying guns. Most Americans don't realize it, but before the U.S. invasion of Iraq, there was almost no gun control. Saddam Hussein was perfectly okay with his people going and buying machine guns, which suggests to me that Saddam felt he was very much loved and admired by his people, that he didn't have a lot of enemies out there. And I remember seeing people, you know, up on the tops of buildings. I mean, he was a sitting duck if anything had happened there. Meanwhile, on the day that my wife and I went down to the Los Angeles Hall of Records, we were going to get our marriage license, and we just, by complete coincidence, we weren't paying attention. We were there the day that Bill Clinton was showing up to do some political speechification with a lot of the California politicians who were running for high office. And I remember it was just wall-to-wall Lexan bulletproof barriers. The Secret Service was everywhere. Everybody had guns. We got frisked and fondled about 8 times just getting from the parking lot to the Hall of Records to get our marriage license and back again. And I remember, and this was really before I got heavily involved in politics, and I remember thinking, these are people who are terrified of, these are leaders who are terrified of their own people. And that is wrong. There is something wrong when our politicians, supposedly elected by majority popular vote, are that afraid of their own people that they have such an armored presence at all times. And I remember seeing Dick Cheney in his limousine and what an, you know, incredibly thick windows they had on the car to protect him. And now we're seeing the same thing with Barack Obama and the Beast. This is a guy who's terrified of his own population, which probably explains why they're reading our emails and monitoring our phone calls and all the rest of it. That's a bad sign when a leader is that afraid of their own people. Anyway, coming down here to the end of this segment, we've got about 20 seconds here left. The U.S. government, recognizing that it has screwed up the economy and put us into a tremendous amount of stress, is showing how much they love and care for us all. They've put out a website on how to watch for the warning signs of suicide brought on by the recession. So when the government starts warning you to watch out for people suiciding because of the economy, you know the economy is really, really in bad shape. Folks, please don't kill yourself over the economy. Kill the people who wreck the economy. It makes much more sense. We're going to stop for some commercials. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. I'm just going through the email here from our listeners and the chat room, which is open for business at whatreallyhappened.com. And somebody just sent in a quick note about, oh, shame on you for saying, you know, kill the people who wreck the economy. I was being facetious. I don't condone violence. On the other hand, over in France, apparently, yet another factory management has been seized by the workers as a protest for planned layoffs. And, yeah, people are getting very, very angry, and there's no question about it. We're seeing all these riots and protests in all these other countries. I think it is a very interesting statement that Americans, by and large, have yet to see this kind of level of protest in the streets yet. Partly it may be a feeling that maybe it's not going to help. The other part of it being the recognition that peaceful non-cooperation really is a better way than the violence, or it may be all the medical waste that's in our drinking water, which includes a lot of tranquilizers and antidepressants and stuff. We don't know. I do know that it would be a mistake for anybody in the government to confuse American silence with consent, or with the absence of any actions to date as a guarantee that there won't be any kind of actions in the future. Now, as I said on the show earlier, in fact, just yesterday, I'm convinced that the ultimate fate of the United States is that the government is simply going to collapse the way the USSR did. And I don't think we need to resort to violence. I don't think this revolution is going to be won with guns. The revolution is being fought today and won with keyboards, not with bullets and bombs. We're going to go to the phones. We've got John in Canada. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Michael. Geez, I don't know, man. Quite a bit, I guess. I think part of our problem is a failure to understand our circumstances. You're doing an awesome job, but we need better communications straight across the board, particularly on a national level. Ben Stein, for example, on Larry King the day before Obama spoke on Jay Leno, was referring to an article he read in the New York Times, and he said, well, you know, people, this is extortion. When AIG says, if you don't give us the bailout money, we're going to run you into the ground, it's a criminal offense. Okay, so, and he didn't, that's about as far as he went, but that's our problem is, and I'm listening to everybody, I'm trying to, nobody's acknowledging what a criminal offense is, what fraud is, and why it should be, and it is illegal. It's just we don't have leadership skills present to defend ourselves, you know, like a subprime. A lot of these market shenanigans are very hard to communicate to people who don't understand any how these machinations have developed, because it's certainly not offered on television, except for this documentary I watched on CNBC the other day called House of Cards. And they're talking about how people would get refinance their mortgage at the bank, and the bank wouldn't tell them, or the bank would tell them, oh, we're going to lower your payments. So, of course, almost everybody signed on to that. You're going to lower my payments? Oh, yeah, it's a pretty good deal. Sign on the dotted line. Thank you. And then in 2 years, their payments double, and they foreclose on the house and walk away with that property. And these are some of the kind of scams. The premise or the central core of our problems is that the banks never cover our loans, you know? So that's the biggest issue around, and it's got very little to do with, well, and these are our problems in communicating. You know, we can find mutual agreement, common cause that all people would adhere to. It's just there are all kinds of surrounding issues that people either have different differences of opinion or, you know, if we center ourselves on certain principles, there doesn't have to be any violent altercations at all. An example, if I was granted the privilege, which seems unlikely because I've been trying to do this for almost a decade, but if I was granted the privilege to speak on, let's say, CNN or Coast to Coast, I would just simply say, Bush closed 9/11 investigations immediately after the terrorist event occurred. Okay, that's called obstruction of justice. He needs to be arrested immediately. Does anybody on earth disagree with that position? And this is the idea of justice and what freedom is. And you're not going to find an honorable soldier to speak out and go, no, we don't want to pursue the evildoers. You know, even if bin Laden did do 9/11, which of course he didn't, but let's just say he did. Are you saying he had no accomplices whatsoever? Don't you want to find out who all was working with bin Laden? Because the investigations were closed. And similarly with the banks, if we understood that there's all kinds of criminal malfeasance that's occurred, fully documented, we would demand our money back. You know, for example, as I think I might have told you a couple weeks ago, Bear Stearns went bankrupt with $77 trillion in derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible? We have to understand what kind of scams they've been running. You know, they'll say, we lost your pension money, for example. I encourage anybody to just type, you know, lost pensions or some, you know, use that word lost, and how many times the banks come forward and say, you know, we lost your money, we lost your money, we lost your money. I want an explanation. CNN never makes those demands. You know, Ron Paul, for all the good positions that he has, well, I don't want to put any pressure on Ron Paul, but a lot of people say Ron Paul's the answer, and he's not fighting judiciously. He says, well, get him to audit the books, and maybe in a couple years we'll be able to figure it out. I want it to be figured out right now before they get away with any more money. Another thing that was articulated in the CNBC documentary, I believe I've got to get a copy of it and make sure I heard what I thought I heard. $8 billion this one individual was clearing each month on subprime mortgages, you know, on being able to turn, get somebody to sign on the dotted line for to lower their payments and then score big time. Like, you know, and he also made a movie, this individual, smashing up $500,000 cars for pleasure. Because he's just got so much money to waste. And, you know, your pensions are gone. He's got money to waste. Your pensions are gone. You know, and nobody's saying that everybody's, well, you know, they goofed up. We goofed up. No, they're stealing our money. In fact, they've already gotten away with so much money. And, you know, who is it that disagrees with these positions? We're fearful of what we don't understand. And,
well,
you know,
that's,
like
that, you've hit the nail on the head. There are a lot of people still wondering why Americans are fearful to stand up. You know, we've gone along with this idea that we have to be in our free speech zones. And I'm waiting for that one incident that's going to really get through the malaise and get people angry. As you say, yeah, people don't understand exactly what's going on. It's deliberately obfuscated. Our leadership is, you know, we're told, let the police handle it, let the courts handle it, but the police and the courts, they're completely compromised. We're finding out now that for the last 6 months, all of these trillions of dollars that are going into these financial institutions, they're turning right around and they're making huge campaign donations to the very politicians who are signing this money over to them. And so the system is simply corrupt all the way from top to bottom. And this is why we're reaching the point, you know, it's like Robert Kennedy used to say, when peaceful revolution becomes impossible, violent revolution becomes inevitable. Now, again, I'm not saying I think we need to go violent, but I think we need to understand that working within the system doesn't work for us anymore, because every day we're seeing the solution to the economy's problems consists of taking money from working people and middle-class people who don't have it to dump on people who, as you say, they've got so much money, they're smashing up $500,000 cars just for the giggle factor.
Yeah, and one more thing I'd like to throw in, too, in the CNBC documentary, again titled House of Cards, they'd interviewed Greenspan on the credit default swaps, and of course, as I know, as I, you know, imagine a lot of people don't know what I'm talking about, but the Greenspan was asked specifically, how do you make something that's worthless, practically worthless, into AAA-rated an investment vehicle? It's not worth anything, but all of a sudden it is. How did they do this? They asked Greenspan, and he goes, I had no idea. I reread it, and he almost said he was a mathematical genius. He says he's very familiar with mathematics. He looked it over. He could never figure it out. He never understood what it meant. And he's the guy that heads the Federal Reserve, okay? Now, that shows there needs to be some, you know, people have to question whether a criminal warrant has to be made for his arrest. How could he say that, to say that he had no idea of what was going on, and he headed the Federal Reserve? Why didn't he speak out at that time? Because it in that documentary, they're talking about $900 billion minimum is coming out of America's pocket due to these credit default swap scams. And again, it's got all this, you know, credit default swaps on derivatives and subprime mortgage matches.
Yeah, it's legalized gambling is what it is. It's all gambling debts. And, yeah, it is a major problem. And the part that has not sunk through, and maybe in 2 weeks' time when people are signing their 1040 stupid forms and they're sending in, you know, what little is left of their lives to the federal government, and they'll realize that the government is taking this money from them. It is not fixing the roads. It's not fixing the schools. It's not fixing the bridges. It is simply taking all this money from the American people, and it's giving it to the people who created the economic mess.
They're shipping the money out of the country.
Yeah,
you know,
it's going to foreign central banks. Oh, yeah, the corruption is just nonstop. And listen, John, we got to let you go. We got to take a commercial break. And thank you for calling and calling again. Richard and Steve, we will take your calls on the other side of the break. So hang with us. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns. People like you and me.
prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. We're going to go right back to the phones to Richard in Texas. Aloha, Richard. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Mike? A little off topic, what you were talking about earlier about the Saddam Hussein thing and him getting up on the car and letting his people have guns and stuff. I just wanted to make a small message out to the American people saying that let's not forget who our presidents and leaders are of this country. Do the same thing that the dictators in other countries that this country goes after. There is some truth and value in the honesty of someone like Saddam Hussein or the president of Iran, who we say are torturers, murderers, rapists, all that stuff. You still have the choice to believe in honesty. And instead of living for the facade that our leaders put on here in America, so I think people should get angry about that, that we are just as bad, if not worse, than what we call our enemies. And I just think it's very important that you mention that about how the people believed in Saddam, you know, showed face because at least he was honest, you know, and honesty speaks a lot. I mean, some people join the military because it's the only honest thing to do rather than get an $8 an hour job, you know, and live life of hell because it's honest, you know. But I just wanted to, you know, bring that out. That's my opinion.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. And I'm not sitting here saying that Saddam Hussein was any kind of a good person or not. I was just simply pointing out the dichotomy. First of all, because of the claims made about his nuclear weapons, which turned out to be completely false, we know our government and our corporate media is lying to us about a lot of stuff. So we need to be very careful when somebody says the president of Iraq is a real jerk, or as in the present day, the president of Iran is a real jerk. We don't know. We need to look at the available news footage that's out there and just really consciously say, is what I am seeing with my own eyes consistent with what they're trying to tell me is going on? And a lot of times, if you stop looking at the superimposed title and you stop listening to the voice trying to tell you what it means, and you look for yourself, you're going to see, okay, this doesn't really fit in with what they're trying to tell me is going on here. And I'm not saying Saddam is all good, and I'm certainly not saying that our political leaders are all bad. I think all leaders seem to be egomaniacs and oligarchs at their core. And I'm not saying that, you know, Saddam was a wonderful person, but I am saying that we do know when our own leaders in the middle of our own country, the United States of America, are leading these armored and bunkered existences, then we have to ask ourselves, why are they so terrified of we the people who in theory at least voted them into office and whose taxes are paying for all these bunkers and armored cars and armored helicopters?
That's
right. Whose contracts go off to France, by the way. Anyway, so, Richard, thanks an awful lot for the call. We're kind of loaded up on the phones. I'm going to let you go here, and we're going to switch over to Steve in Canada. Steve, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to say I love your show, and it's ironic. You just said the phrase, basically, that I wanted to talk to you about, which is how we know our government lies to us because of the Iraq situation and the weapons of mass destruction. And another thing, you use that phrase a lot, and it's a very emphatic phrase. It gets the point across. But the other side of it is that you've got a growing listening audience around the world. Your show's becoming hugely popular. And as new people come in, maybe they don't know as much about 9/11 as maybe they will in the future. And I just, as a suggestion, when you're trying to emphasize the fact that our government lies to us, I mean, George Bush was standing right at the microphone when he said, we could have never imagined planes flying into our buildings. Meanwhile, they were running drills of the exact same thing that day. It was an outright, one of the most blatant lies. Him and Condi Rice said exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. As well as they had run numerous drills about planes flying into the Pentagon, which there's reams of video footage of how they had the plane literally in, like, the octagon area of the Pentagon.
Yes.
Or the Pentagon, you know, in the middle there. It's like, I'm just as a suggestion, maybe you could use that as a way to emphasize how we know our government lies to us when our president stands there and says, we could have never imagined planes flying into buildings. Meanwhile, they were running the exact same drills that day, as an emphasis. Mm-hmm. Just kind of throw it in there and get people to think, well, what's he talking they were running drills that day. And then just gets people to open their mind a little bit, because I think most people do understand now that we were outright lied to about Iraq, but some people may not fully comprehend how much we were lied to about 9/11.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and one of the things as we get new listeners coming into the show is we have to be very careful that we don't get into broadcaster's occlusion.
Right.
We all know what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
when we make these references, and we need to be reminded, and you, the audience, need to remind me, because I'm guilty of this as well, that the new listeners and the new readers coming in don't know what we know. They don't have the extensive body of background information where sometimes some of the things we say won't make sense and won't have any resonance. The
right.
reason I will use the weapons of mass destruction deception as a foundation starting point for the government lies to us is because the vast majority of people know that to be true.
That's
and that's our starting point. From there, we can then go into 9/11 and say, did you know that even though they knew the World Trade Towers were under terrorist attack, the Secret Service didn't feel it was necessary to move George Bush out of the Booker Elementary School? Why? How did they know he's not a target? And
right.
you basically, you can't push people across a bridge to the
nope.
truth. You have to lure them across a little bit at a time. And one of the skills that the truth movement needs to always keep in practice is to get a sense of how much people are willing to hear and never take it further than that. Because
yep.
we know a lot of stuff way, way beyond what we're talking about right now. But we also know the audience will never accept it. They won't, they won't believe it. And they'll just, their defenses will spring up and they say, oh, no, I can't listen to this. It's just too absurd. And so it's always the issue of, you know, what do they know now? What are they prepared to accept right now? That's where you go. And you don't go any further. You don't take them further than that or you lose them.
I agree. I've found people's interest has been very piqued when I've mentioned that to them
yes.
before. Like just, I run a retail operation. I mentioned some of my good long-term customers that, you know, I have one of those fake 9/11 George Bush U.S. bills on the counter and they look at it and they start laughing and, and I go,
I still have a box of those. I got to give those things away now that Bush is out of office. You know,
but
I just mentioned
to them about 9/11. I said, did you know that on 9/11 they were actually running drills that were about terrorist attacks crashing into the towers on that exact same day that they had FEMA and National Defense people in place already there at the site the day that that happened? Don't you find that a bit of a coincidence? And they just go, nobody's ever... That wasn't on the news. I was like, well, you should check it out. And they just go, that's interesting.
So, yeah, it is. I mean, that's one of the reasons why there was no immediate military response to the hijacked planes is people were thinking, you know, it's just more of the phonies they're running across the country. In fact, on one of the tapes from the air traffic controllers talking about the hijacked planes, you can hear them say, is this part of the drill? And the guy says, no, this is for real.
Yeah, it was like,
go,
is this real world or is this, I forget the other term. Yeah, I know, it's amazing to actually hear the FAA guys going, is this real world or is this live?
This is part of the drill, definitely. All right, well,
thank you for what you do.
You got
really
it. Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks an awful lot. Okay, well, my goodness, we're almost done with the show here, and there was so much I wanted to talk about, and I guess I'm going to take it in tomorrow because right now the big issues are what they're calling drug violence in Mexico. Appears to be a civil war where the Mexican people are tired of the drug corruption in their own government and they are trying to take their country back from the druggies. And it kind of makes you wonder why our government seems to be siding with the drug lords in terms of not wanting the Mexican people to get any more guns. But the real big issue, we're seeing all of a sudden this renewed push for a war in Iran. Bibi Netanyahu just got sworn into office in Israel, and he's already talking about we must deal with Iran. They've got nuclear bombs. They've got a Death Star. They have rogue Jedi warriors. warriors and they're massing at the border, and you Americans got to go kill them for us. And they're really pushing very, very hard, and Obama is ready to go along with it because he needs a war he can blame the economy on as a distraction or simply as an excuse for whatever. And folks, war with Iran is going to mean war with Russia. War with Russia will be World War III, and we will lose that one. It is up to you and I to stop this insanity from happening. We'll be back at 5 p.m. tomorrow Central Time with more news, more phone calls. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and Aloha America.